We've been a study of 1 Corinthians, and I told them last hour, I don't know that I've done a study in a long time that has impacted me as deeply as just this book. The Church of Jesus Christ always stands at a crossroad. And that crossroad occurs just in every generation, there's a consistency that we get to decide, will we choose in our generation, in our time, will we go and be to the glory of God and will we the kingdom of God? Or this other crossroads, will we just be a cultural church, just a cultural Christianity? And the Corinthian church was an immature church, and the Corinthian church looked like where it was headed was a cultural church, and Paul's dragging them back. And so this wonderful study, it applies to us. What are we going to do? What are we going to be? How are we going to live? And this study has been so helpful. We're going to be in the 16th chapter. If you'd like to turn and hold that, that'll be where we'll be eventually. Let me take just a second here and kind of catch you up slightly. Just some stories. We asked you a few weeks back to take 1 Corinthians 13. We asked you to memorize the first seven verses because that's kind of where the paragraph break was. And we asked you to pray that back to the Lord. And then I ask you, if you wouldn't mind, would you just send me stories, stories of what's happening as you memorize that and pray it back every morning. Lord, I want to live out this text. And so I want to give you an update before we get to 1 Corinthians 16. The stories are coming in are fun stories. And again, I hope you'll send me more. But I was a single mom in the congregation telling this story last Wednesday at the church picnic. She said that she was at Walmart. And she'd been at Walmart, and it was a day or two before she's supposed to get her paycheck. So she said, things were tight. And she said, but I needed to get some stuff for groceries and so forth. And so she said, I knew I could spend $32 or $34. And so she said, I tried to add it up in my head and do as careful as I could. And I got to the checkout line, and she said, I must have made a mistake because when I got there, I was $3 or $4 over. And she said, well, when they rang it up, and I went, oh, I'm sorry, you know. And she said, I mean, I'll get my paycheck in a day or two. So let's just take these items back off. Well, at Walmart, nothing wrong with what they did, but they said, well, you need to go to customer service and pull that off. And so she goes over to customer service and just, again, going, I'm fine, but I need to take these items off so I can go ahead and pay this. Well, while she's at customer service, a guy basically is brought up and said, no, don't take it off. He was the man in line behind you. He wants to pay for your entire order. And she's going, oh, that's very, very kind of you, but no, I hate for you to do that. But he insisted I'd like to pay for it. She was going, that was very kind, but no, I'll get my paycheck. And no, please. And then he went ahead and said this, said, I've been reading through 1 Corinthians, and when you're doing that, these things happen. And she said, well, my church is going through 1 Corinthians, and she's talking about that. And so they had this conversation of two people that were having this, and she said it was just so humbling that somebody had been praying that back to the Lord, and they stood there. But the comment that he made is, I've been studying 1 Corinthians and reading this, and when you do that, these kinds of things happen. Well, I really believe that's true. I really do believe God makes divine appointments and opportunities and lets you see parts of the kingdom you wouldn't normally get to see. On a personal level, just for me, I too have gotten 1 Corinthians 13. There's a series of eight in there that are what love is not. Love is not rude, and love is not self-seeking, and love is not easily angered, and love keeps no record of wrong. I mean, remember that section of four in there that are nots? Well, sometimes in your prayer time, and I know many of you are doing this, you think about it and you contemplate what the flip of those are. This week, I was profoundly impacted somehow in my own prayer time and thinking about it. For some reason, the reality that love doesn't keep any record of wrong, but love, just the opposites of all of those, love keeps better record of the kindness of people and the gratitude you'd like to express. And I realized that I had had so many kind things that are done in my life and given. And I thought, I didn't write a note to that individual. I said the thank you at the time, but you never kept a record of the kind things. And it just was it was something for me. I'm not trying to preach at you or anything. I'm just telling you, going, wow, there's something in the life of love that is far more observant and far more memory of the kindnesses we received. And so just, I think all of us have stories to tell, and so I would just encourage you in your own study. 1 Corinthians 16. We have been doing a series here. While we use the 16th chapter, you're not actually done with Corinthians as a church. I put a 12-week preaching series together, and we kind of packaged it. And then we're going to go back and pick up 3 or 4 more weeks out of the book of Corinthians on things that got missed. But I won't be preaching those. We kind of put a package together that I was working on. In fact, Jay St. Clair will be preaching a couple of those sermons. Kevin's preaching one. Titus is preaching one. Josh Quaddy actually picks back up in August, and he preaches a couple. This is my summer gift to you. I won't be preaching for about 6 weeks. It's kind of Christmas in July as far as you guys are concerned. But for about the next 6 weeks or so, I'll be around and I'll be working on stuff, but I won't be preaching on Sunday mornings. And they'll be picking some of the things from Corinthians. So if you're going, well, I thought we were done with Corinthians. Well, actually, you're not. They're going to go back in and fill the things that I skipped and was too cowardly to touch. They're going to settle the issue of what women should wear to church and submission to their husbands and things like that. So you'll want to be sure and come back to those. 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter. I want to read this, but I want to remind you of where we've come. Paul will say that a partially converted individual is incredibly dangerous and damaging. Chapters 1, 2, and chapter 15, a partially converted person doesn't worry about changing the message. There's parts of the gospel message you'll like, parts of the gospel message they won't like. They'll just change it as they want. They'll make it pliable. There's parts of the gospel message that individuals will just simply discard because it doesn't sound right. It sounds atrocious to them. And so chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 15, they'll change things. Don't do that with the grace of Christ. He will say a partially converted individual won't worry too much about leadership. They will use leadership in the ways that they can manipulate leadership, and they'll become leaders in the way they can manipulate what they want. They don't choose godly leadership. They choose talent over character. In chapters 3 and 4, he will say a partially converted individual won't worry about purity. In their relationships, they will make decisions that are self-centering, and so they'll make decisions about lawsuits and sexual decisions, and they'll make decisions in their marriage. You want to know a partially converted individual? If you know anything about their marriage, anything about their sex life, or anything about how they even handle their money among people, you can tell a partially converted individual. It's pretty obvious, and Paul talks about that. And a partially converted individual will not really love well. Chapters 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14. And so we talked those through. Partially converted people are dangerous. On the other hand, a fully converted individual, man, incredible gift. A fully converted individual is a shadow of heaven. A fully converted individual causes people to be able to see God fleshed out in his heart. A fully converted individual, there's somebody for whom the gospel message, they wouldn't tinker with it because the grace of Christ that forgave me at Calvary and a Christ who's coming back, all the things that God said, I wouldn't change his message. And a fully converted individual will choose to wed two things in leadership. They will select their leaders and they will be leaders who wed together courage and humility. Boy, that's a funny thing to tie together unless the Spirit of God's in you. Humility and courage. Fully converted individuals will be pure. There's a purity about their life. There aren't secrets. And then a fully converted individual will love people. So that's been the walkthrough. I mean, that's the outline of the book. And we've gone through it a couple of different ways and let you look at it. What does he have to say in the 16th chapter? What's he going to finish with? We're going to make a single point, and then we're going to illustrate it this morning. And the illustration is powerful. You're in for a great morning. I mean, in fact, buckle in. This is a wonderful morning when I get through with my part. But you need to hear my part first, because it lays the foundation for what you're about to hear. Verse 1. Now about the collection for God's people, do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of each week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income. No, I'm not going with this where you think I'm going. Saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. Then when I arrive, I will give letters of introduction to the men you approve and send them with your gift to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable to me to go also, they will accompany me. What does Paul have to say to them in his closing comment? Yes, it's about he wants them to take an offering up and collect it on the first day of the week. And so when you come, be doing this offering. But here's what he calls them to. This immature church, this broken church, he asked them to lift their eyes, and do you realize that you've been invited and called into something bigger than yourselves? That God's in the process of using you, that if you'll let him, that there's something far bigger and beyond yourself. Now, my own first gut instinct when I would read about this church at Corinth, or if I were in this church, I would think that God would say, look, when you guys get your act together, when you grow up, when you stop stumbling around, then God can use you in bigger ways outside of yourself. But you got a now thing to take care of, and then we'll do the bigger stuff outside of yourself later. And Paul says, that's not true at all. God never invites somebody to not be a part of something bigger than themselves. If you're going to follow me and be kingdom people, lift your eyes. There are things you're going to be a part of you never dreamed. It is broader and bigger, and God's open doors. You have no idea. It's beyond yourself. Are you living that way? And that's where the first point of this starts. He says to him, I want you to take up an offering for the church down in Jerusalem. That's 800 or 900 miles away. What in the world is a small group of believers in the city of Corinth taking up offerings to send it to Jerusalem 800 or 900 miles away? And there's a long story to that, but for time, let me just simplify it to this. There's poverty there by people that sent you the gospel. That's a portion of it. But here's the second issue. There's this great gulf. It's a gulf like the American culture would have had between the black and the white culture of slavery. It's a great gulf, the racial area, like you might see in Southeast Asia, between some groups of one particular race and another, huge, huge gaps. This gap was between Jew and Gentile Christians. And so he says to them, you know what? Your offering, because of the famine taking place down in Jerusalem, your offering from a Gentile church to go down there to these Jewish believers, you don't have any idea the good you could do. You have no idea what your lavish love would bring for unity. And he calls them to something beyond themselves. The call of Christ has always been to beyond yourself. Whenever you come to the gospel, you're always told, lift your eyes up on a wider horizon. God never called me to save my little ship and my little circle. Whenever Jesus introduces the gospel, he describes this little mustard seed that becomes this tree that fills the whole world. There's something here. When the Holy Spirit is given and the very gift of speaking in tongues occurs on the day of Pentecost, and the very thing the Corinthian church in chapter 14 is struggling with, what was the gift of tongues? It was the fact, a lot of things, but one of them was this. Every language out there, God cares the gospel's in. Every people group, God cares about. There's something out there far beyond yourself. And if you don't lift your eyes, the Spirit of God is even speaking in languages to call you to have a heart for those. You're going to come down to verses 7 through 9. He picks it up and hits it again a little second way. Just another way of reminding them to look beyond themselves. In verses 7 through 9, he will say this. Now, I do not want to see you now and make only a passing visit. I hope to spend some time with you if the Lord permits, but I will stay on Ephesus until Pentecost because a great door of effective work has opened to me and there are many who oppose me. Look, I want you to know you guys matter to me and I'd love to come and spend time with you. And I intend to spend time with you at Corinth. But there's this huge open door, and I can't leave it. God's doing something. I want you to see what he's doing in Jerusalem. I want you to see what's even happening here in Ephesus. He will write 2 Corinthians and talk about a second door that God opens at Troas. God's opening these doors, and he'll use that language, actually, in 2 Corinthians. Then the last phrase I want you to see in there, they're all tied together. Verse 13. In verse 13, he says, be on your guard. Stand firm in the faith. Be men of courage. Be strong. Do everything in love. Verses 13 and 14. At verse 13, I like. Now, don't misunderstand me. I like it very much. But that's the New International Version we put up because most of you have a New International Version on your lap. It's accurate. I don't have any problem with it. But I am going to tell you that I prefer a different word. That be on your guard is the New International put it, is a bit passive. It's a defensive phrase. In the Greek, and nobody made me a Greek scholar that ought to be correcting the New International very often, okay? But there are many versions that actually use a different set of English words that I light on and like better. The actual Greek phrase is be alert, be looking, be observant, be watching. So be on your guard is right, but it's actually, I think, in the Greek, an active phrase. It's the idea of look what God's doing in Jerusalem, and here's what you guys can be a part of. Look what God's doing in Ephesus, which you can be a part of. Do you have any idea the doors that God's opening? Do you have any idea what God's doing in the world? Don't you dare live in the confines of your small little world. Here's what it means to be a godly church. You be alert. You stand firm in the faith. You be men of courage. You be strong. You be about things far beyond yourself. There's a contaminated church that's out there, and there's a real church that stands beside it. The contaminated church will always be self-centered, and the contaminated church will always have their own little circle, and the things in our circle, the things that directly impact me, that's what I care about. And the real church of Jesus Christ is assailing the gates of hell with doors that God's swinging open in places that nobody would else care about if the Spirit of God wasn't prompting me. It is beyond yourself. It is huge. There's a story I didn't tell last hour. Only knew part of the details, and somebody filled it in for me, but a friend of mine preaches in Cincinnati, and he told me one day in a hallway, he said, unbelievable what's happened in the local school system. Unbelievable what's happened in our community. They had been doing Christmas as a congregation, and with a big Christmas program, and they spent quite a few $1,000s on this big Christmas program they did every year. It's a nice program. He said, you know, we just came to the conclusion that that probably wasn't the best use of kingdom money. And so they went down to a local school. It was a school that was in disarray, and it was one of the close ones to them. And they went down and said, what could we do? And the first thing somebody said was, well, we don't have the state money to paint classrooms. We don't have the state money to paint hallways. Man, if you could even take just one classroom, we'd just be... Well, the people who were listening to that said they didn't have any idea what we had in mind. They went back to them and said, if you could dream and had everything you wanted, what would you do? They said, we would remodel from one end to the other. These kids come from homes in crisis, and they walk into a gray place that is so in disarray, and we try to do this. And that school said, fine. Or the church said, fine. At the Christmas break, they organized 4-hour shifts, and they ran 2.5 weeks solid with 4-hour shifts, some of them 24 hours a day from the church. They completely remodeled, completely redid that school from beginning to end. Those kids came back in January, and they came into an environment that was repaired and loving, and they let the church begin to mentor in that. That was a transformation. They said the scores, the kids, the families, they said everything, and it came off a church stepping in with a school and saying from front to end, we want to be a part of this. I don't know what God has in mind here, but it is certainly more than just a few trinkets and baubles thrown some direction. Let me finish with this. At verse 13 says, be alert. It also says, be a man. That's not meant to be sexist, but here's what it does mean. You know that one of the most offensive things that a man can be, a man has violated his own nature when he gives into passivity. When a man becomes passive, in fact, when a woman becomes harsh or a man becomes passive, they are exactly opposite of their nature. And we ruin who we are as human beings when women become harsh and men become passive. Paul takes the same word, same idea, and says, when a church doesn't play the man, when a church doesn't have courage, when a church is passive, you've lost who you are. Let me finish this series on 1 Corinthians with this. There's always going to be two churches that exist side by side. There's going to be the contaminated church that's an embarrassment to the name of God, and it will exist. Jesus said it would in the parables that he told. But there'll also be the true church, the real church, the one that is the glory of God. How do you get the contaminated church to lose its voice? Well, you can't shut it up. The contaminated church, you can't put some kind of gag on it. You know how you get the contaminated church to lose its voice? You get the real church of Jesus Christ to do what it ought to do. And when the real church of Jesus Christ does what it ought to do, when the real church of Jesus Christ shines as it ought to shine, suddenly the power is lost in the voice of the contaminated church, and it becomes a non-entity in its culture. The call to College Heights, as the call to Corinth and everything else, is this: with the church of Jesus Christ, would it be authentic and genuine? Would we be people who are alert and who have the courage that's required? Would we live out the dreams of God that are beyond ourselves?